I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Intersection. We're in the final stretch leading up to next week's Florida primaries, and there's a lot of political chatter out there. Could Connie Mack be defeated by latecomer Dave Weldon in the U.S. Senate race? Will John Mica trounce Sandy Adams over in District 7? And Charlie Crist pops up at a Democratic fundraiser in town. Is he thinking of becoming a Democrat? We'll put those questions to 90.7's political commentators Democrat Dick Batchelor and Republican Lou Fry. That's ahead on the monthly Intersection Politics segment. And I'm happy to be joined in the studio by 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor. He's a former state representative, now heading the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Great to have you in, sir.
Good to be back. Thank you.
And, of course, we're joined by former Republican Congressman Lou Fry, now attorney with Lowndes, Drostek, Doster, Kanner, and Reed. Lou, good to have you with us.
I think it's 25 years with him, so that counts, doesn't
it? Long time. Long time.
Well, guys, let's talk politics. The U.S. Senate race, you know, we've got this GOP contest between Congressman Connie Mack, former Congressman Dave Weldon. You've got a couple other candidates in there, Colonel Mike McAllister, and one more Tea Party candidate there as well. So what do you think, guys? Dave Weldon picking up a lot of endorsements. Looks like his candidacy picking up a bit of steam, but this is really late in the game, Lou Fry.
Yeah, that's the problem. Dave did a fine job in the Congress, did a great job in the Space Committee, which there isn't much left of it, but worked hard and was well respected. But, you know, you're looking at a situation now in Florida where with early voting and with absentee voting, in some cases, you got well over 50% of the people who voted. So you're playing to a small pool. Even if you run a great ad or you knock it out of the park or something, A, who's watching it, because everybody's tired, and B, there's so few people who it can impact in terms of the vote. So, Dick, it seems to me, unless there's a miracle, that it just isn't going to be. I don't think there's enough time left.
I don't think so. I'm going to ruin Lou's reputation and agree with him on what he said. Early voting makes a big difference. You're not out there early and putting money in this campaign. In fact, Connie Mack's raised money, and he'll raise more than Weldon win. So I think unless there's something that happens, and it could be a miracle, it's definitely Connie Mack to lose.
What do you think, though? Connie Mack has had this strategy, Lou Fry, of not focusing really on the opponents in the primary, basically targeting all his energies on Bill Nelson. Is that the right strategy?
Yeah. If you're running ahead in the polls, you've raised a lot of money and nobody else has, you want to act like a winner. You know, you raise more money, you continue, and you're really going after Nelson, so it's pretty hard for Republicans to be angry at you for anything you've done, and it's easier to put the party back together, assuming that Mack wins the primary.
Dick Batchelor, there's been no debate between these candidates, these Republican candidates, and that has been a staple, the debate between candidates for a long, long time in national politics. And do you think this is an indicator of people moving away from that trend?
I think so, and I think, you know, again, I'm going to really ruin his reputation because I agree with Lou on this. If you're the front runner and you've got some money in the bank and you've got the name recognition what he had, which he has because of the stature of his father, former United States Senator Connie Mack, you know, you don't need to get involved in these debates. If you're running close and you get involved in debates, try to make a distinguish between yourself and your opponents. But you want to run against the incumbent, and he's been doing that. What's going to really happen now, the Republicans, of course, don't have to do too much now, and Connie Mack doesn't either because Chamber of Commerce spent about $2 million against the incumbent Bill Nelson, and Bill Nelson's got about $12 million in the bank, so he's in a good position in going in to the general. But last point I'll make at the risk of being redundant is the problem is the super PACs. We don't know how much money they're going to dump in this race.
Yeah, we know they'll dump some money. I've been on both sides of the issue, you know, where I've been in a position where I've been way ahead and didn't want to debate. Fortunately, the House was in session, so I'd send my wife and a couple of the kids to the meeting. They say, you know, Lou'd love to be here with you, but you paid him to do his job, and he's up in Washington working, and he says to send you the best. So, you know, it depends on which side the bread happens to be buttered on this one. It's not any great philosophical deal. It's which gives you the political advantage.
Well, let me ask you this, Lou Fry. Connie Mack, though, a little bit of a vindictive side been coming out. out in these last couple of weeks of the campaign, particularly against the media. And Adam Smith, a political writer for the Tampa Bay Times, Connie Mack calling him out at different campaign events, his campaign sending out vitriolic letters and stuff.
Well, the press may be the only group that's less popular than members of Congress. but they may be a good one to call out.
What do you think, though, about basically not necessarily wanting to engage with the media? I talked to Bill McCollum, the former attorney general, about this, and he said, you know, politicians of his generation still view traditional media as important. Do you think Connie Mack is enough of a young enough generation that he's basically disregarding traditional forms of media?
Could be, because traditional forms of media are fading, and now you've got the non-traditional forms of media, like the Facebook and the tweet and the Twitter and all these
social
other
media.
Things that are... So I don't think that anybody's writing the media off. The media is very important. And frankly, in the presidential race, the media has done a wonderful job for Obama. You know, the unemployment rate goes up. He only gets 140,000 jobs instead of 400,000. And they say, what a great victory. The economy's back and you're scratching your head. So there are some legitimate gripes, I think. But that's the ballgame.
What do you think, Dick Batchelor?
I'd admonish him. He better learn how to deal with the media. The fact is that the most recent example is our governor. The governor ran for governor, spent $7-8 million, never did an interview with an editorial board. And in the first session, the legislature tried to play around the media. And the fact is, now he's coming back to the media, passing out donuts, holding press conferences, and making himself available.
He's going to Wawa.
He's going to Wawa, too. And so I think Connie Mack's making a short-term mistake. The fact is, you can't run against the media. I mean, everybody who's very conservative would say, we don't like the media, we don't trust the liberal media. They don't say anything about Fox, but don't trust the liberal media. And the fact is, that only plays so far in Peoria. You've got to engage with the media. It's your medium, your best medium, other than paid advertising, to get your message out.
You know, looking at the Democrat side of things, Bill Nelson is actually in a Democratic primary, Dick Batchelor. What do you make of that contest?
I had no clue.
Well, that's the answer. I would say, who's running against him?
Now, let me narrow that down. I have no clue about that specific issue. Yeah. Now, some listeners might think I have no clue about anything, but that particular issue, I have no clue about that. He has an opponent.
He does have an opponent. But
well, let's not tell anyone. I'm supporting Bill.
You know, it's interesting. Our reporter Matthew Petty was talking to Bill Nelson the other day, and he asked him, what do you think about the GOP field? And Nelson brought up the point he does have an opponent out of Naples.
Well, then let me predict here fairly safely that Bill Nelson will win overwhelmingly.
That's a very courageous thing, and I'm right behind you on that one.
Well, I'm sitting with...
Courageous. Courage, right here in the airways.
Courage. What are you...
His prediction.
I thought you were working for CBS. Let's talk to Dick Batchelor. He's a former Democratic state representative in Tallahassee, and, of course, we're joined by his Republican counterpart, former Congressman Lou Frey. There are 90.7 political commentators. We're talking about the August primary coming up next week. You can tell us what you think about it online, WMFE.org. Shoot an email over to intersection@WMFE.org if you'd like to get in touch with us. What do you think, Lou Frey, in terms of Tea Party influence this primary session? Is this going to be enough to unseat incumbents like it was in 2010, or do we need to wait to November to tell?
I don't think you're going to have to wait from November. I think it's going to have an influence. You just can't walk away and not regard what they're doing and how they're doing. But the impact is not going to be as great. The enthusiasm isn't there as much. The money isn't there. And I think they're only going to impact nationally two Republican potential seats right now.
Well, which ones?
The one in Texas, Senator Cruz.
Yeah. And then the one in one of the other western states, one of those little states out there.
Yeah, one of those little places out there. And the funny thing
I didn't think
about,
there were small little states.
Well, they're large the territory. They have 20 people.
Like North Dakota, there are 20 people in North Dakota. But I think if you look at the Tea Party, it really, like Texas recently, Cruz, you know, winning. He came from behind. He's running against the incumbent governor, of course, endorsed by Governor Perry. The incumbent lieutenant governor endorsed by Governor Perry and everybody in the establishment. And Cruz comes out and with the Tea Party thrust, and he's the nominee. I mean, very strong candidate. And Kansas was interesting because the Tea Party's running people against who were already in the Republican primaries. And that's what they did last time. Lou and I talked about it. If you push the primary to the far right with the Tea Partiers, does that person, is he weak going into the general election? In some cases, the answer is yes. Some cases, maybe it's no. But that's what you have to watch. But in this state, I don't see the, quote, Tea Party as strong as it is in places like Kansas and Texas.
Do you think
the MICA race probably is going to be the that's going to be the one?
You're talking about Sandy Adams, who rode a wave of Tea Party support into Congress.
Yeah. And
is now challenging MICA.
She's got some endorsements from that side, it's really at this moment nobody really knows how impactful it's going to be. I think it's going to make a difference, but I don't think it's going to make enough difference to change what looks like a MICA victory.
Could it be, though, this is a different district? It's been redrawn from where John MICA has been for the past 20-so years. Used to have that long, narrow district that went all the way from Winter Park up towards Jacksonville.
But you're in the same media market. Mm-hmm. You're in the same media market. I think, Lou, and the fact is the Tea Party on the ground and grassroots doesn't make a difference. Yes. Can you outspend John MICA 4-1? Probably not. And the other thing that makes it awkward is you got Sarah Palin and the Tea Party Express endorsing Sandy Adams, but you got Governor Mike Huckabee supporting John MICA. So they've all got these very conservative candidates or former candidates endorsing them. So I think it gets a little bit discombobulated as far as the message. If it was just one candidate, I'm the Tea Party candidate, but I think John MICA says, well, I'm Tea Party. I'm light tea. or decaffeinated tea, or whatever
tea.
It is.
Yeah,
this iced tea.
This may be loaded tea. The other point of it is we're talking about it, though, which tells you that Dick and I and you certainly think that it's a factor, and nobody's really sure of how much. Now, like we've said before, a lot of people voted already, so Sandy's running some tough ads at this moment. But again, those ads should have been run probably 30 days ago. But she didn't have the money to do that.
One week before the primary, John MICA still had $1 million in the bank.
Yeah.
In retrospect, does it have made sense for her to try to stake out a claim against someone like John MICA, who is just a powerhouse member of Congress, Lou Frey?
No. I like Sandy. She's a friend. I've known her for a long time. I had a talk with her. I mean, it looked like that she could run in a district, the new district, that actually had 2% more Republicans than the one she's running in. There were people in it in the primary, but we could have put it all together. MICA could have been her chief fundraiser and so forth. I don't know how that one got off the table, but that could, it could be a close race nationally. And because we lose that seat, potentially, you could end up with throwing the House to the Democrats.
What do you think about that, Dick Batchelor?
Again, this goes his terrible. I mean, I'm not intentionally trying to ruin Lou's reputation today, but this is my third time I have to agree with him. The fact is, though, John MICA's income at 20 years in the Congress, before that in the state legislature, well-known, has the grassroots connections after that many years in the Congress and the state legislature, and several $1 million. The fact is, it's very hard to run against it. Now, Sandy can raise some money, but she could not raise what John has raised in this race.
What do you think about the message, though, of political outsider? That's kind of how Sandy Adams trying to frame herself. Now, Sandy Adams, legislature in Tallahassee for almost 10 years, and of course we know Micah's long record there.
That's a hard sell.
She might be outside looking in, but she's not an outsider. No. It's a hard sell.
Well, let's stay in that kind of Central Florida area here. President Obama was just recently at Rollins College. This was a makeup visit, of course, after the tragic shootings in Aurora, Colorado. President Obama at Rollins College attacking Mitt Romney, Lou Frey, on economic policy, as the president has been doing. What does he gain by coming to Central Florida, Winter Park?
Well, he could gain enough electoral votes to make him president. That's probably worth the trip,
Worth the trip.
And Florida is obviously one of the key states. It's a little confusing right now as far as Obama goes and as far as Nelson goes. You've seen a couple of polls that have indicated that Nelson's in real trouble, and then you've seen a couple that maybe say he isn't in trouble. But forget the polls. Everybody out there, forget the polls. Don't care about them. Look where the candidate is going to be. And where the candidate is going to be is where the candidate sees votes, need votes, and needs help. Forget it. Forget all the other baloney that comes with it. Watch where the candidate is, and you're going to get you'll get a picture painted of what's going on.
How big of an impact does a trip to Winter Park have in terms of the Central Florida political landscape, Dick Batchelor?
I think it has a big one. Keep in mind, Florida's a swing state. Obama can still win without winning Florida. I don't think the strategy that is being mapped out. I'm not sure Romney can win without Florida. So it's very important. Number two, in the I-4 corridor, everyone knows the I-4 corridor delivers the vote statewide, so it's very important. And he's in this media market. And it's, and he had, what 3,000 people show up, enthusiastic supporters. So it makes a lot of sense.
And he gets on every TV thing. You know, his wife gets on. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, it's a free campaign, a statewide appearance, and an important one.
Now, on that same day last week, Senator Marco Rubio, yep. U.S. Senator Marco Rubio, mm-hmm. stumping for Romney in Orlando. Does Romney lose something, though, by not going head-to-head in the same geographic location as President Obama on the same day?
I think that he's done dropped off in the sense of his ads that could make sense all for a long period of time, and I think he should be. What a wonderful setup. Here's Obama talking about the issues. You don't have to make any facts up about the economy. I mean, there's you can just tell the truth for once in these ads and so forth. And the numbers for Obama should be drifting down a lot more. There was a big article about the 50% thing. I think 37 states he's under 50% or so forth mm-hmm. in terms of his popularity. But he isn't bleeding. I mean, Obama should be out there being resurrected. But it isn't happening. He's hanging in.
You don't think this.
So you think he is the Messiah? So
yeah,
is,
I will.
This is a confession.
So you yeah. so you don't think that perhaps this was a choice of maybe Marco Rubio, a better communicator than Mitt Romney, given the rough week he had over in Europe.
No, I don't think so. And who cares what happens in Europe?
And keep only the French. Keep in mind, there are about 8 states in play. And I agree, you can look at all the national polls. The national polls don't mean anything. Look at the 8 states, 3 of which
Ohio,
Barack
Virginia,
Obama is
Florida,
ahead
right?
by yep. between 4 and 6 points. That's what you look at. This campaign is about where are they going, and they're going to 8 battleground states because those 8 battlegrounds, you're either blue or red, some purple, but those 8 battleground states, Florida's one of them, we're lucky.
I was just checking over headlines from several weeks ago, and there was still chatter about Marco Rubio being a potential VP pick for Mitt Romney. And the chatter 3 weeks ago was maybe the announcement will come out next week. And yeah. that was 3 weeks ago. What do you think, Lou Fry? Is Rubio still on that list if we saw him out stumping?
I don't believe so for a couple reasons. One, I think the polls show that he doesn't make that much difference nationally because the Hispanics aren't a united vote, and Mexican Hispanics have a different view than maybe Cuban Hispanics. Secondly, you have a young man who's got a great future, and I'm not so sure he's willing to jump out of the plane without a parachute at the present time, because one way or another, he's going to land on his feet. And also, we've got a couple people, Pawlenty, mm-hmm. Rob Portman, who for over a year and a half, I've been saying, is going to be the nominee out of Ohio, the senator. Most people don't know him, but an incredibly competent person. So, who's left on the bench? If you're a Republican looking to nominate, who have you got left? Condoleezza Rice?
I was going to say Condoleezza Rice. Bobby Jindal?
Too liberal.
No, he took too many mistakes along the line. Who's left?
I think it's narrowed down. I don't, unless Romney is not known for making surprise announcements about anything, one. Secondly, I have said from day one that I did not think Marco Rubio, while he's certainly a very impressive candidate, when you're 41 years old, you ask that question, are you ready to be president today? And I think Paul Ryan suffers from that same thing called youth. And can you, you're just too young to be. I think it's going to be Pawlenty or Rob Portman or somebody like that. Rubio has a very fine future. I think it's going to be, and I agree with Lou again, I think it's going to be Pawlenty or Portman because I just don't see. Now, he might finally say this. At
Governor
Hail Mary,
of Virginia.
He might just come out with somebody else that we don't even know yep. about, but I just don't see that happening. He plays it too close to the chest.
All right, Dick Batchelor. Charlie Crist.
Yes.
He's our guy. What do you mean?
Guy.
What do you throw
he's
him first?
Don't fight over Charlie, guys. Come on. Now, Charlie Crist was at a fundraiser with John Morgan for Bill Nelson.
Right.
That brought in former Democratic President Bill Clinton. Now the chatter is really going hot and heavy here. Is Charlie Crist going to come out as a Democrat, maybe run for Governor Dan Gelber, former gubernatorial candidate, AG candidate, saying, come to the party, Charlie?
Yeah, and the fact is, and we talked about this a little bit before, the fact is, if Charlie Crist switches party and wants to run for governor as a Democrat, he has one thing that's already bought, and that is name recognition, tremendous name recognition. He also has favorables and unfavorables when he switches party. And that's
trust issues?
Trust issues because he's taken more than one position on issues and switching parties, you know, going from a Republican to independent to Democrat. So he's got that issue.
Well, he's got all the parties covered.
He does. He has all the parties covered. It still begs the question of why somebody who's been in the cabinet, who's been in the governor, who's running for U.S. Senate, wants to go out and do it again. But But if he decides to run, I mean, he will absolutely be a factor.
Do you think he could out-talk, certainly, Governor Rick Scott?
Oh, yeah, and Charlie's a good politician. He goes in the room, he works the room, he remembers the name. He knows I love baseball every time over the last 20 years, always brings up baseball. You know, he's a good politician, and people in this state forgive. First place, there's people in and out, people don't focus on it. And the fact he was a Democrat running in that or is a Republican now really doesn't make people stay up all night and worry.
Let me interject this, too, is we don't have a strong bench. I mean, we really don't. I mean,
you're not going to run Alex Zink again.
Would be good. I think Gilbert could have been the governor last time I had any run. I think he would be a strong candidate. I hope he thinks about running. I think Alex Zink's time is come and gone. I don't think she's a candidate anymore. So we look at our bench. Charlie gets in. You know, power abhors a vacuum. There's a vacuum. You step in, you're already ahead of the game.
You know, I wonder, Dick Batchelor, are you seeing, is there room in the Democratic Party for conservative Democrats, maybe more so than there is in the
Who's
Republican
the conservative
Party
Democrat?
For moderate Republicans? I don't know. Would Charlie would Charlie Crist be a conservative Democrat, Dick Batchelor?
No, I think Charlie's more of a moderate Democrat. I mean, if you look at some of the issues he heralded when he was governor, I mean, there were quite, you know, some could say they were Democratic, and that's why he lost some support in Republicans in the House and Senate. But, I mean, look, we if the question is, do we have room in our tent? The fact is, we need to get our tent pitched.
Yeah.
We need to get a tent pitched. Right now, we're under construction.
Yeah, and how much is statewide recognition if you had to buy it? $3 or $4 million?
$3 or $4 million minimum.
Minimum. So he goes in $4 million ahead.
Yep.
What do you think, though, Lou Frey? Change in the Republican Party? Now not a lot of room for moderate Republicans?
Oh, I don't think that. I think that the Republican Party in Florida has had a pretty broad base in terms of it. I think it's got a lot of good legislators in it that have done a pretty good job in their areas and that. So I think everybody's sort of relatively content with where we're going in. We don't have any. Sometimes you get people who are way out in one end or way out in the other, and everybody focuses on them, and they cause you a lot of problem if you're running. And I don't see that happening to the
well, I agree with Lou three times. I'm
now
entitled to disagree with him one
okay.
time. I think the House and Senate are run by extreme right-wing ideologues. And I think that's why you're not seeing much compromise. Unfortunately for the Democrats, you know, we're such a minority. It's like applauding with one hand. We come up and we go, can I talk? Very little influence, but they're trying to. But I think the party, on the Republican Party, is really much different than it was even 20 years ago.
Let's look a little bit ahead to Tampa, the Republican National Convention coming to Tampa later this month. And Governor Rick Scott has been put on the speaker's list. And I mentioned that thing about Charlie Crist talking a little bit better than Governor Rick Scott for a reason. He's not known for being a charismatic speaker and has occasionally gotten his foot in his mouth a little bit, Lou Frey. So
he's trying.
What are Republicans going to be thinking when the governor
praying.
Takes the stage?
I'm thinking the gong show.
The speech will be well put together.
It'll be
the longest one you've ever seen. It'll be direct on the point on one issue or so.
Midnight?
Pardon?
Will it be at midnight?
No, it's probably 11:30. Probably not prime time.
Well,
he is, by the way, the host, so you got to do something.
The fact is, they could give him a script, which basically is he welcomes you to the state of Florida. He can outline some of the issues and, you know, statewide it is. It'll be focused more on the national agenda than it will his agenda anyway.
Well, you know, Marco Rubio also on that list for a good bet for making a prominent speech. And what should we read into tea leaves for who gets to speak, Lou Frey? Because after all, remember, it was a young senator from Illinois in 2004 who addressed the DNC, and look where he ended up.
Huh. Well, I'm thinking of our country. It's obviously an incredible opportunity for somebody to do it, and if you know, and the person that makes a nomination speech is remembered for a
Absolutely.
Long, long time.
Yep.
I think that you're going to have Rubio probably get a little more time than the governor. But, you know, you got to give Scott some credit. He is really trying to be a governor and not a dictator. And he just started a couple years too late. And I want the governor of our state, Republican or Democrat, to be able to work with the legislature to move stuff because we've got tremendous issues. We've got $1 billion short in education here and there. So let's give the guy a break and see how he does.
Good opportunity for Marco Rubio. Keep in mind now you use the Democratic convention where a little known, actually probably totally unknown Senator Barack Obama really kind of introduced himself on national stage. Keep in mind, in 1988, as governor of Arkansas.
Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Bill Clinton. Who
he did speak too long. He did speak too long, but in fact, he got on the stage, and it helped. So Marco Rubio, this is a good opportunity for him to introduce himself to a lot of Republicans.
Really national hit. This is the big time.
Good opportunity. I just hope, in all fairness, they don't put him back to back, and I'm not being negative here. I just think you don't want Marco Rubio to speak and then have the governor speak. You want to separate the governor and put him on sometime after. Because so Marco Rubio is a very good speaker.
Let me ask you about education, Dick Batchelor. We just got word last week that Education Commissioner Gerard Robinson, who heads up the state agency, basically leaving after a year on the job. This happening after the previous Education Commissioner, Eric Smith, who was very well respected, left under pressure from the Rick Scott administration. What's happening in education up there? And people seem to be jumping ship.
Well, you have three commissioners of education, but keep in mind you've had three secretaries of the Department of Corrections, you've had three economic development directors, but getting back specific to a lot of turnover, but getting back specific to education, it's very interesting because there are a lot of faux pas, you know, the grading and the scoring, the FCAT, the grades came out wrong, they had to reassess the grades again. I think what's happening here, though, you even saw the governor, Rick Scott, say maybe, and it was a stretch, but maybe we should revisit FCAT and scoring some.
And that was interesting to hear that he actually
very
gave that maybe.
Very interesting. So I think what you might have is the legislature revisit, not do away with FCAT, not do away testing, but maybe revisit how it is being done in the system and how you grade the schools.
And maybe bring some common sense into this whole thing and not make us fixated on the FCAT.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a bunch of changes of staff, though. Rick Scott also got a recent new chief of staff, after there was some, looked like some plush assignments were going out of the governor's office again. I mean, is this just par for the course? I don't seem to remember this much happening under Charlie Crist, Lou Fry.
Well, I think every governor that I've ever been involved with somehow or other gets involved in making sure that legitimately contracts go to people who favor him. And I you know, if you're going to blame the governor for that, I think I'd say, you know, there's a lot of other people who have done it, long as it's legitimate, long as it's legal.
I think Lou would agree, though, that being a governor who'd never been elected to any office, even local office, coming in as governor and really had a mindset about how the government works and really put people on the staff, frankly, that didn't last that long because they didn't have any experience.
We talked about that. Right. I mean, he really didn't know how to run the governor's shop.
And Steve McNamara, unfortunately, because Lou and I both said it was a great choice, had been around the Senate a long time, be a good chief of staff, but then unfortunately he stepped in it. But his new chief of staff is an experienced guy. Used to work for CSX for years and been around the political process.
Worked in Jacksonville a lot.
Yep. He did.
Really briefly, guys, Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll on a trade mission to her native Trinidad and Tobago had gotten in some trouble on the wrong side of gay rights groups around the state for making some insensitive comments. What do you think there, Dick Batchelor?
Well, it seems to have evaporated a bit. I mean, she did come out to her credit and apologize for her insensitivity.
Lou Fry, anything to add?
That's the end of that story. That has no legs.
Well, I'll tell you what does have legs is our two talkers here. That's former Democratic State Representative Dick Batchelor, who's now with the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Great to have you with us, Dick.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And also former Republican Congressman Lou Fry, now with Lounge, Drostic, Doster, Canner, and Reed. Lou, great to have you with us.
Always fun.
And it'll be interesting to see what the results of that August 14th primary are.
We will.
You can catch this program and sign up for our weekly podcast online at WMFE.org/intersection. There you can always catch up with the Florida Talks blog, find out what's going around at other stations in different parts of the state. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.